All of us have spirit guides. Some of them work out of sight, but some of them get right in our face. Welcome to Seek Reality. I'm Roberta Grimes. Our guest today is my friend Garnet Schulhauser, who, like me, is a business attorney, but Garnet has retired. I'm still practicing, still trying to get it right. That's a very old joke. One day, a homeless man greeted Garnet on the street, and in that moment, Garnet's life was transformed, but we'll have him tell you the story. Welcome, Garnet.
Hi, Roberta. Thanks for having me on your show.
I'm so glad that you're here. Garnet was as... I'm sorry to say this, Garnet, dry as toast, as we attorneys are. And he was living a perfectly normal life, right? Almost retired. And then just tell me in a few sentences, what happened on that fateful day?
Well, I was still practicing law, and I was strutting down the street in my navy pinstripe suit, looking every bit like a stuffed shirt, straight-laced corporate lawyer.
Right.
And all of a sudden, out of nowhere, a homeless man jumps out in front of me. And instead of making a quick sidestep around him, I was sort of frozen to the spot because he had these amazing sparkling blue eyes that were sending a gush of pure unconditional love towards me and infusing my whole body with an amazing sense of peace and security. So I stood there and
wow.
soaked it all up.
Wow. Wow. And this gentleman who you said smelled like dead fish, was that what you said?
Yeah, he did smell like, I mean, he looked like a typical homeless man. I mean, he was dirty clothes and greasy, stringy beard and hair. And he did smell like a dead fish. I mean, he played the part perfectly. I was totally fooled and initially thought that he was a homeless man, but a very different kind of homeless man. And then I found out later when we got into a conversation that he was really one of my spirit guides in disguise. So
wow.
he had an amazing disguise and he totally fooled me.
Wow. And this is the second book, which is coming out, I believe, just this week, Dancing Forever in Spirit. But the first book, which was Dancing on a Stamp, which came out about 2 years ago, was one that I started to read very skeptically. I've been reluctant to trust anything channeled after about 1950, because I figured everything later, someone was trying to make a buck. But I read the book, and what enthralled me about Dancing on a Stamp was that here was someone, a business attorney, who had not done decades of afterlife research, and he was writing a book which was about exactly what it had taken me decades to put together, decades of very hard work. So I have interviewed Garnet previously. If you go to iTunes and search, look up for Seek Reality with Roberta Grimes, there's an interview about Dancing on a Stamp. And now here comes Dancing Forever with Spirit. And so I read it again. I read this new one and a little less skeptical this time. And Garnet, it's a beautiful book. It's full of wisdom. It's full of kindness. It's full of strength. And it's right down the line with what the dead have been telling us. So I'm very, very pleased to have you back and to talk again about this book. But in this one, you did a lot more interesting stuff than you did in the last one. You began to astral travel. You had never done that before, right?
Never astral traveled before until Albert took me on these out-of-body excursions, which I describe in my second book.
For those who aren't clear on what astral traveling is, we're built like a set of Matryoshka dolls, Russian nested dolls, and we have some interior energy bodies which travel out of our bodies virtually every night. We don't remember this, but we travel out of body, sometimes just stay in the room where the body is sleeping, and we meet with our spirit guides, we meet with those we love who are in spirit, we just basically do the maintenance of our very important spiritual growth and maybe make changes to our life plan. We do all of that in our sleep. We don't remember it. The difference is for someone like Garnet who has a guide who wants him to see some amazing things, Garnet was awake. And you say Albert just yanked you out of your body?
Yep. He just appeared in my bedroom one night. I woke up with a start and I saw this shimmering ethereal figure standing in the doorway. As it moved closer, I recognized my old friend, Albert, in his homeless man attire. And I said, you know, hi, Albert, nice to see you. And he said, I want you to come on a trip with me, or several trips, astral trips, because I want to show you some things that you can write about in your second book. And my view is a picture is worth a thousand words. So rather than me describing what I want you to write about, I want you to see it. And so he just reached out and he grabbed my arm and pulled my astral body out of my physical body. I turned around and looked behind, and there my body was still laying in bed, sleeping beside my wife and little dog. And he said, you ready to go? And I said, yep. And he just sort of, I followed his lead, and we rose up through the ceiling, up through the clouds, and stopped at a point high above Earth where he let me turn around and look at our beautiful planet floating there in the starry background. So it was really quite an amazing start to a series of adventures that went on for several months after that.
Wow. Yeah, that's and you were only a little afraid, you say?
I was a bit apprehensive initially because the first time I remember, you're right, we all astral travel at night, but we don't remember it.
No.
So this is the first time I was sort of consciously aware of it. And I looked back and I thought, I wonder if I'm going to ever get back into my body.
Yeah.
But I thought, well, I'll take a chance with Albert. He's never betrayed me or let me down before. So away we went. And after the first trip, I came back into my body very easily, woke up the next day, and there I was. I remembered my trip. So I knew it was it was an easy thing to do, and I had no cause for concern. So a little apprehensive just at the front, but after that it was an easy trip. And in fact, you know, there are times when I was on the spirit side, which is so beautiful and so full of love and happiness, that I often wondered if I shouldn't just be better off dallying there for as long as I wanted rather than jumping back into my body and facing another day on planet Earth. But I knew I had things to finish here, and it wasn't an option. It was like, it was never an option. It's like, no, Albert said you're going back and you have to write this book and another one and another one. And
what a slave driver the man is.
Oh, honestly. He is, yeah. And he was a bit of a taskmaster, and he had a very definite agenda. He didn't always tell me what was on his mind or where we were going, but it was apparent to me after I was – when he took me somewhere or we met with somebody, it was apparent to me what the lesson was. And I knew that he – you know, this wasn't a fun trip. He wasn't taking me on an astral trip to have fun and see the sights. He had a very definite agenda. So I thank him for that, because I think that that it makes a lot of sense and made it easy for me to write things in my second book that made sense to people.
What was he trying to show you, just briefly? What was the in the beginning, as I recall, there were a series of lessons he tried to give you with this astral traveling. What was the first one?
Well, the first one was, and this arose when he took me to visit the Council of Wise Ones, is the message was, okay, you know, humanity has really progressed a lot. They've advanced a lot since the Stone Age days, and they have great advanced technology, but they haven't advanced in pace with their spirit or their emotional intelligence or spiritual intelligence. And so that means that where we are now is at a stage that was very similar to a lot of other advanced civilizations in Earth's past, like Atlantis and Lemurius and some of the other civilizations that we're not even aware of. But they also did the same thing. They advanced up to a high state of development and then ended up crashing and burning for various reasons. And he said that our civilization is at a similar point, and he really wanted us to he was really trying to help humanity get over the next step so that we could expand our consciousness, get rid of our negative emotions, and embrace love as fully as we could so that we wouldn't destroy ourselves, because we have weapons of mass destruction, as you know, and if we're not careful about what we do with them, we could destroy all life on Earth, including all humans. So the message from the council was, okay, guys, you really have to shape up. And get your act together, because if you end up destroying yourselves, we cannot directly interfere, and your extraterrestrial friends cannot do that. So it's up to you. And what we're trying to do is send a bunch of messages, channel messages to people on Earth. You're one of them, they said to me. There's various other people, like Roberta, you're one of them for sure, I know. And we need to spread the message to humanity that we need to get rid of our negative emotions, our fear, and we need to embrace love. And if we can do that, we'll get past this crucial point in our development.
One of the things that interests me about this story, which is why I wanted you to sort of tell it, is that repeatedly in recent years, I've come across essentially the same message from different places in different ways. What seems to have happened, and I don't say this as any kind of fact, I just think this is what's going on, is that we sort of scared the dickens out of those who care for this planet, the beings in not in bodies who care for this planet, when we exploded the atomic bombs during the Second World War. And at that point, a plan was put into place to elevate the consciousness of the planet, to teach us to grow spiritually, because we had basically advanced, as you say, technologically to the point where we could destroy everything, and yet we had not advanced spiritually. So we were just a loose cannon. One of the things that's suggested is that the reason we haven't had another nuclear war is that they've been prevented. There are stories of rocket tests and other sort of weapons tests in which a rocket would come out of nowhere and take out the one that was being tested. And there are I was witness accounts of this kind of thing. I don't know if it's happening, but it's kind of surprising if you stop and think about it that it's been, you know, 60, almost 70 years since atomic bombs were used in warfare, and that's not happened since. And that's true even though we have, frankly, a number of nuclear countries that have bombs that could explode them. And these people have been cranky and easily able to persuade to use the bombs, and yet it hasn't happened. So much as they're telling us, and again, through Albert and over, they're telling us, it's your problem, you have to fix it. There does seem to be now a great deal of help on this planet, which is a wonderful thing. And these are astral beings of who have lived on Earth and now are in what you call the spirit side, and what others call just the afterlife levels at very high level. And there also are what we think of as extraterrestrials, which I refuse to talk about, but nonetheless, apparently they're there. And it does seem to be working. I've talked at other times on these podcasts about the fact that very quickly people are accepting this information. If this book, and you said this too, Garnet, if you had published your book 10, 15 years ago, well, you probably wouldn't have, would you? You were just unable to even contemplate doing something like this. But things are changing.
Yeah, they have changed. And Albert was quick to point out that even though it seems like we've got a long ways to go, we've actually come a long ways in the last 30 or 40 years. And he was right. He said to me, in the 70s, I would not have written my book. And if I had, nobody would have read it. Yes. And I would certainly wouldn't be on any, you would have had a radio show like you do, and I wouldn't have been on it. And
that's
so
right.
we've moved a lot, and we're getting a lot of help actually from the spirit realm, because they recognized the problem, as you said, when we exploded the atomic bomb in the end of the Second World War. It's like this was sort of like a red flag going up for them, and it's like, well, we really need to help these guys now. It's at a crucial crossroads. And so they've been sending, in the last while, they've been sending, asking for volunteers from very advanced spirit souls, to asking them if they would incarnate on Earth and live among us and try to help us through their teachings, through their presence, through the energy they give off. So there's lots of advanced souls in the last while who have come to Earth and incarnated as humans to help us in various ways. Spirits also send us messages all the time. I get direct messages from Albert, and he asked me to write a book about his messages and about our travels. You're getting messages from spirit, whether you realize it directly or not. And
I refuse to talk about that. No.
And there's lots of other channels yes. All throughout the world who are channeling spirit. And they're radio hosts, and they're authors, and they're people who write blogs on the internet or who speak at conferences. And so the message is spreading out, and the council said that, that they're basically in a full court press right now to try to spread the message through through various messengers so that the humanity itself can sort of realize where they are and make a big change. And our extraterrestrial friends, and there's lots of them, and they've been watching us for eons since the dawn of time. They still are watching us, and they help us as well. Some of them actually disguise themselves as humans and live among us, and they try to do the same thing as the spirit realm was doing. And they've also helped us by sending us telepathic messages. You know, in a, you say it's a wonder why we haven't blown ourselves up yet. Well, there's a lot of people on the spirit realm and from the ETs who are constantly sending messages to the leaders of the countries who have the capability to blow us up, really working hard to send them positive messages and to discourage, you know, conflict and pushing the button on the nuclear rockets to cause us all to go to hell in a handbasket. So they're really working hard. What they can't do, according to Albert, is like the ETs. They have a very advanced technology. They could, if they were allowed, they could just wipe out our nuclear weapons and our other weapons. They're not allowed to do that.
And that's interesting. What is happening? By the way, I was teasing when I said I refused to talk about my getting messages, but indeed, my work is very different from yours and from many others in that I'm purely based in what the evidence tells us and trying very hard not to be psychic, be a channel, be any of those things. I'm just looking at the scientific facts. And the scientific facts alone are very, very compelling that all of this is true. But as you say, different people are on different missions. I hear from them now daily, people who either have found me through podcasts or in other ways. And I can tell just from the way that they're working on their own spiritual growth that they have their own part to play in this. And anyone who's listening now probably has a part to play as well, because what seems to be happening is that this is not meant to be top down. It's not meant to be that someone becomes or three people become very famous and they sort of enlighten the world. Instead, what seems to be happening is that we are spreading among ourselves these truths, and they're resonating with people, and then those people are spreading them to more people, and it's happening fast. It is just such a joy to be watching it happen and to have a little tiny, tiny part to play, which Garnet, you and I both have.
It is quite amazing, and it's really very gratifying to see that. And yes, Roberta, you've done your research and you've satisfied yourself scientifically that what Albert has said, you know, makes sense and is true. But you know, you are being channeled.
Well,
I can tell you, because Albert said that every author in the world, whether they realize it or not, is channeling to some degree when they're writing their books. And I believe that.
I think it is true. On another podcast, I'm not ready to talk about it yet, but I've had a reading in which now I have a better understanding of who my own spirit guides are and what they're doing. And I have 11. Because of the fact that I'm writing both fiction and nonfiction. And I'm very aware that I would be unable to put two words together to form a sentence if I didn't have their help. It just makes me feel humble. I'm just very glad that I have that help, because it gives me the fun of doing what I do.
Yeah, no, and that's absolutely, I mean, it's great. 11 is a large number.
Yes, it's a crowd.
It must indicate you're very popular, Roberta.
I don't know.
Because I only have 3, according to Albert. But
I used to have 5, I think, and now it's become 11. I think it's because they're having trouble controlling me. I have no idea.
Maybe they're just having so much fun with you.
I don't know, but it is a lot of fun, and I'm going to devote a podcast to it at some point, in large part because each person has a spirit guide. Now, they usually don't get in our face as Albert has with Garnet, but they're there And what they're doing is very, very important in helping us to live the life plan that we made before we were born. And this is something, obviously, that I planned to do before I was born in Garnet in the same way, is about the same age. A lot of people in their 60s now who were born right after the Second World War seem to have come in quite specifically to be part of this effort to raise the consciousness of the planet in response to the exploding of the bombs. Just fascinating to think about and contemplate.
And it happens in different ways. Like I never dreamed that I'd be a messenger for spirit until after Albert appeared. Like I was a practicing right. lawyer, had no thought whatsoever about writing a book. And it just came sort of at the right time for me. Of course, everything's always planned carefully. And I know it was planned beforehand, before I was born, but we're not allowed to remember our pre-birth planning. So.
Right. Right.
So I know it was all planned with Albert. He won't give me any details, but he obviously acknowledged that, yes, we had cooked this all up before I was born. And the plan was that he would come at the appropriate time in my life. And I think he did. And so now here I am. I'm fully signed up to be his messenger, and I really quite enjoy it.
And I'm not credulous. I have trouble. I'm very skeptical by nature. I have trouble believing in anything because I have found so much that fits together perfectly that I'm skeptical of a lot of stuff. A lot of the things that are New Age, if I haven't thoroughly investigated them and seen how they fit with everything else I know, I just don't consider them. So when someone like Garnet, who has no history with this, with the research I've spent my lifetime doing, when he comes out with a book like Dancing Forever with Spirit, I'm very clear that he's getting this information from somewhere important. Listen to Albert on how to grow spiritually. Albert said, "You must rid yourself of your negative emotions in every aspect of your life. You must not dwell in the past. You must forgive yourself for all the mistakes you've made. Then you should forgive everyone who has ever caused you any harm, which must be an unconditional forgiveness without the expectation of anything in return. Finally, you must stop contemplating the future and worrying about the bad things that might happen to you or your family. It's important you learn to live in the present moment and have faith in everything in your life that it will unfold as it should. Live your life like you truly understand we are all part of the source, connected to one another and everything else in the universe, and discard your illusions of separation." Now, after my lifetime of doing research, if you'd asked me to sum up what the dead have been telling us for the almost 200 years, I could have written that paragraph. And since you didn't do the work, Garnet, I know somebody did, and it has to have been our smelly friend, Albert.
Yeah, Albert was, he really did give me some really great nuggets of wisdom, which I really appreciate because I rather than have me struggle with the concepts and the words, he gave me some really nice nuggets, which I was happy to reproduce in my book. And he was really, I think, in a way, when I was writing my first book, he said, "Look, you need to turn off your lawyer brain a bit. You can't talk in convoluted language like you're writing a commercial contract. You have to sort of be very non-esoteric." And he said, "I want you to write your book in a easy to read, easy to understand fashion, so that the masses out there who don't have any experience with metaphysical or spiritual concepts will be able to grasp it easily and think, okay, I understand that." So that was his specific instruction for me in the first book. And I try to carry that forward a bit in the second book because he's not, you know, he wasn't aiming at you, Roberta, because you already know it. He was really aiming my book towards the people who were neophytes in this area, and hopefully I succeeded, but that was his instruction to me. So, I'm very thankful for that.
Your book is easy to read. As are mine. They're meant to be entry points. There is a tremendous amount of information available once you kind of start to get your feet wet. And as I say, I hear from people daily who are in the process. They've discovered Garnet's book or one of my books or some other book. They've heard a podcast. Their interest is piqued, and they want guidance in what might They read next door. How does something they are reading here fit in over there? It's a joy to me to get these emails and to give them a little help, because this is a privilege to be able to help people to discover the truth about their own glorious eternal selves is just the best fun you could possibly have. I should just pause for a moment and say, this is Seek Reality with Roberta Grimes. My own books are The Fun of Dying and The Fun of Staying in Touch. You can learn more about my books at robertagrimes.com. And our guest today is Garnet Schulhauser. He's a retired business attorney, and his spirit guide, Albert, has guided him to bring beautiful and eternal truths to your attention today. Now, what was the other thing that he was really... Oh, he went through a whole series of your past lives. Now, before we even talk about those, and I'd like you to talk about a couple of them. They were all pretty awful. And most people who do true past life regression therapy have this experience. We have a lot of really painful past lives. But please understand, and I think I've said this before, that there is no time beyond this realm of reality, this level, which we call the universe, which is the only one that's dense and material in the same way that it is. All our lives are happening at the same time. In truth, we are living them all at once. So when you do a past life regression therapy, to perhaps, you know, recover from some problem you're having in this life, or you just do some past life grazing as Garnet did, all of that is happening now, and I think that's why it's so rawly emotional for us. Future lives also can be seen if you want to do it. I think most of us don't think in those terms and don't maybe want to know our future lives, but this is a whole area we probably will need to do a separate podcast about, because it's very complex. But Garnet, tell us just briefly about how... I mean, some of them were just very sad, some of these lives. Just quickly, what were those lives that were most painful that you thought that you saw?
Well, one of them, probably the most painful one, was my life as a shoemaker in 18th century England. And I had a wife and a couple of young kids, and business was slow, and we had run out of money. And we were living in a flat above my shop, and winter was coming, and we didn't have any fuel for the stove. And so I decided to go out one day to see what I could scrounge up. And so I went into the ritzy part of town and was walking down the back alley. And there I saw on the back step of one of these large houses was a bucket full of apples that were sort of bruised and blemished a bit. And I surmised that the people who lived there didn't want to eat a bruised apple. And so they'd been put out there probably for a nearby farmer to pick up to feed to the hogs. And so I thought, well, what harm could it be if I take some? So I sort of snuck through the yard, got up to the bucket, put six of them in my pocket, and turned to leave. And all of a sudden, there was a hand grabbing my shoulder, spun me around. It was one of the chefs in the kitchen, who then immediately got some help, and they wrestled me to the ground, called the local police. I was picked up, thrown into jail. And my wife and family had no idea what happened to me. I could not communicate with them. And about a week later, I appeared in front of the magistrate. And despite the fact I said I was stealing these to feed my family, didn't wash with the magistrate, and I was sentenced to hang, if you can imagine, to hang for stealing six apples.
They were bruised.
They were rejected by the owners. In any event, that was the law back then. And so, a few days later, I was marched up to the gallows. They put a noose around my neck and a cloak over my head. And the executioner pulled the trapdoor. I dropped down and I was hung. And so that was kind of painful to watch, even though watching it where I was, I knew that my soul survived, because obviously I was still here.
You were, right.
But it was a painful experience to watch. And then there's a few more. I don't know if you want me to go on or not.
Well, I just want to relate this to another thing that happened that he took you to see. Your family then died that winter. They had no support, and your wife and children also died. So this was a tragedy for a whole little family in 18th century England. Very sad. But then he took you to a modern place in Africa. What did you see there?
You mean in terms of my past lives, or in terms of watching the massacres of the animals?
Well, wasn't there a situation where there was a woman who had a child who had died?
No, it was a case of where I was a young girl in India in early 20th century.
That's right. That's right.
Yeah.
Yes.
Okay. Yeah. So in that scene, I was a young, a teenage girl in a wealthy merchant family in 20th century India. And when the scene opened up, there was an argument between myself and my parents, and my parents had arranged a marriage for me with the son of another wealthy merchant family. And arranged marriages were very important for them in those days, and that's how most young girls were married. But I was rebellious, and I really argued with my parents, saying I'd rather marry somebody that I love rather than somebody I don't even know.
Oh, you romantic, Garnet. Aren't you romantic?
So in any event, the argument went on for a long time, and even though I ran up the stairs to my bedroom and cried my eyes out, nobody came to console me, and my parents were very set that I was going to go through with this marriage. And so despite all my pleas, they refused to budge, and so I decided I had to take matters into my own hands. So I wrote them a nice note saying I couldn't put up with this arranged marriage stuff, and I packed a little knapsack, and I left my room, left the house in the middle of the night, and I hid away in a boarding house, trying to keep out of sight. My mother and father, when they saw the note, were enraged. They weren't concerned about my welfare, but they were concerned about their honor and the fact that that I wasn't going to marry the person that they had arranged me to marry. Anyway, to make a long story short, eventually my landlady figured out who I was, told my father. He came into my room, and instead of saying, "Oh, it's nice to see you again, we love you very much," he pulled out his knife and stabbed me to death. And there I was. You know, the last thing I saw was my father's enraged face as he repeatedly stabbed me. And he did so because he felt his honor had been so breached by my failure to marry this young guy that he had no other choice. And the lesson there clearly to everyone is that, you know, that he was suffering from false honor. And false honor can be very hurtful to other people in your family, to others around you, and it's a very divisive kind of emotion, totally unnecessary. And that still goes on to some degree today.
Yes.
I mean, in North America, we don't have arranged marriages. I don't think, not typically. I think they still do to some degree in some countries, and it's a horrible thing to try to force people
too.
To marry,
yeah.
but to have a reaction. In other words, a father killing his only daughter because she refused to marry someone through an arranged marriage. So it was horrible.
Well, are we seeing a pattern here? Most people who have past life regressions are regressed to the period around their deaths. We don't get to see the happy periods and the lovely things. We get to see tragedies like this, and there are others that Garnet could recount as well. And if you listening, if you decide that you'd like to do some past life regressions, there are many therapists who can do it for you, and you're going to have the same experience. I've done it twice, and that's it. I don't want to see any more bad things happen to me. But all of these situations are kinds of problems that people need to overcome. We as a species need to overcome these problems. We need to overcome the greed and selfishness that would allow a young family to starve to death, that would kill someone over six apples. And we need to overcome this absurd, misplaced sense of honor that would make people murder their own child. There are other, as I say, over and over, that's what Garnet had happened to him. We've all had, according to the people who seem to know what they're talking about, we've apparently all had many lifetimes, hundreds in some cases. And they're all like this. They're all regular people. Nobody was Cleopatra. You know, nobody was Napoleon. They're all regular people living what are often short and tragic lives because humanity needs to progress past all of these disasters, all of these limitations on our spirit, which keep us from growing. And I think that's perhaps the most hopeful thing about this time. Yes, we still have selfishness. We still have poverty and tragedies of this sort. But we don't, and honor killings too. But at least we know the difference now. We know what's right and what's wrong. And I think that's, don't you think that's hopeful now? I mean, isn't that part of what's hopeful about this century?
Oh, absolutely. And we've come a long ways, as I've said before. We're progressing at a really nice pace, but we need to sort of pick up the speed
yes.
a bit, and get
to.
There a little sooner. But, these past lives that Albert showed me, it wasn't sort of just to, out of my curiosity. I was, I didn't get to choose them. He chose them. He chose the snippets of my various lives that would teach me a lesson and perhaps pass a lesson on to the readers of my book. So he was very careful about how he did it. And they all, they weren't all horrible. There was a couple that turned out nicely, but even there was a lesson to be learned.
Yes.
It's quite fascinating. I mean, when, the Akashic Records, as you know, have the complete records of every life that's ever been lived. And when we cross over to the spirit side, we can go there and view every one of our lives if we choose, or view other people's lives. It's really quite an amazing place. But I wasn't allowed that luxury. Albert just sort of said, look, here's four or five. Now, come on, we got to go and we have something else to do. So, but it was really quite interesting. And the only good thing about watching some of those horrible lives was that I knew I was just watching a past life and I didn't really die.
Yes.
I wasn't really killed, only in a physical sense, and my soul survived. But it was quite a learning lesson for sure.
And even people who have seen that they had relatively nice lives very often will see in the regression that they have some horrible thing that they did totally heedlessly. And that, again, it brings you up short. I found it just too emotionally wrenching to do past life regressions. But you're brave, Garnet, so you went and did it. But now you get to watch a very important person's life, some key aspects of a very important person's life. Tell us about that. Tell us about the wedding.
Oh, right. Okay. Well, I've always been curious about Jesus because I was raised as a Roman Catholic. And of course, Jesus is very central to that religion. When I was there in the Akashic Records and I said, well, Albert, you've shown me some things. Can I ask you one thing? I'd like to just know a bit more about Jesus. Was he a real person or was he just an invention of the Christian church? Albert said, oh no, he's a very real person. He's a very advanced master who incarnated on earth, to come and help humanity, by passing his messages on. And he knew that, of course, that a religion would be started, although he didn't know exactly how it would turn out. So he's a very real person, a very great person, he's still, of course, there on the spirit side. And so I said, well, could I see, something about his life? I'm just very curious. And Albert said, I'll show you part of his life that's really not well known. And so I saw a scene from the marriage celebration of Jesus and Mary Magdalene, and they were married. And they were married, and they had three children. Fact about his life has been edited out of the scriptures and the gospels. It was there originally, but the early leaders of the church decided that wasn't the vision of Jesus they wanted for their church, and so they got rid of this. They thought better to show Jesus as being a celibate man all of his life, because that would make him, in the eyes of the followers, more holier and more godlike, which is really quite silly. The Catholic Church has a hang up about sex. And so they redacted all that stuff. And so now you have, in their view, Jesus was a celibate man, never got married, never had sex, never had children. And he, was crucified for our sins. And so Albert just wanted me to show me that this is what really happened to Jesus. He was married, which is typical for, a Jewish man back in those days.
Yes, they all were married. It was not an option. That's right.
Yeah. And so very typical. He was very typical. He was no less holy or wise or great because he was married and had children. But that's a fact. But the church has decided that that's not a good aspect to have. And the other thing, of course, part of it was at the wedding celebration, sitting beside him were two of his brothers. And I said, well, so do you mean that Mary, his mother, had other children? And he said, yes, of course she did. She had four sons and two daughters after Jesus. She had them with Joseph in the normal fashion.
yes.
Even though the Catholic Church says, no, Mary was a perpetual virgin all of her life. And after Jesus, she didn't have any children, nor did she have sex with her husband, which again would have been extremely unusual for a Jewish couple living back there at that time. And all those references were, of course, redacted, except for a few, as you probably know, Roberta. There's a few references left in there about brothers of Jesus, and some yes. of the commentators try to diss that by saying, well, it wasn't really children of Mary. It was children of Joseph from a previous marriage, or it was cousins of Jesus or whatever.
Yes.
No evidence to support that, but that's the only way they can get around these few passages that were admitted when they were doing the redacting.
Yes, the passage in your book, which describes the wedding, is really, I thought, quite beautiful. Jesus was 17. He was just exactly like a normal young Jewish boy would have been at that age, and he had a normal life. And it makes me very happy to think he had a normal life. He certainly deserved to have one. And there is evidence that the children of Jesus were spirited away, and his wife, basically they protected the children, and the children survived. And there is some, and I think Dan Brown used these stories in one of his books.
Yes.
But there are accounts that suggest those children were taken to, what is now France. If that's true, just some food for thought. If you go back 1,000 years, everybody who has any European ancestry is related in blood to everybody else of European ancestry. Just 1,000 years, it's halfway to Jesus. So if you are of European ancestry, it seems to be more likely than not that you also are related by blood to Jesus. So that, I think, makes you feel closer to him than the thought that he was some holy, unattainable figure. He was not. He was a glorious, glorious teacher. And I don't mean to leave the rest of the people in the world out. The evidence is, although it's less, they haven't done all the tracing yet, but the evidence is that if you have no European ancestry, if you go back just a few hundred more years beyond 1,000 years, everybody is related. So we are all one in more ways than one.
Now, having realized that, Roberta, I'm tempted to go out and see if I can walk across a lake now.
I don't think so. I think somehow there are some things you can't do. I mean, Jesus says if we have as much faith as a grain of mustard seed, we can tell a mountain to go remove itself into the sea, and it will obey us. However, for us to be that confident, we're able to do it. Even that tiny bit of confidence, because a mustard seed is the smallest seed possible, at least was in his day. We don't even have that much certainty about our ability to do it. But I think it's not worth trying, probably, Garnet. Maybe we should just write another book. I don't think it's going to work.
Yeah, you know, I think you're right. But just speaking of the powers of Jesus, and of course the Gospels describe a lot of his miracles, you know, walking on water, turning water into wine. I asked Albert about that, and he said, well, Jesus was very advanced, and he knew how to focus his thoughts so that he could tap into the energy of the universe and perform these miracles.
Yes.
And he was like some of the other people, like Moses and some of the other biblical figures. They also knew how to do this. And he said, we're all capable of doing that. We have to start learning to use more of our brains instead of just 10%, and eventually we could all get there, and someday we'll be able to do this, and what we term now miracles will be just sort of commonplace occurrences.
Yeah,
long ways from there. Yeah.
In fact, in the afterlife, we do use our minds just that effectively, and Jesus said, all these things I do, you will do and more. So, he clearly believed we were going to get there. Remember when Peter was trying to walk on the water and he sort of said, whoopsie, I don't think I can do this, and started to sink. And Jesus said, you have little faith. Why did you doubt? That's the problem. I think we all doubt. But the point of this beautiful book is to give us another way of approaching what are these enormous eternal truths that the dead have been giving us for almost 200 years. The dead, if you read afterlife evidence, it comes to you piecemeal. Each of the communications give you a little more information, and you put them together, and you have these glorious central truths. If you read what our friend, oh, by the way, Albert's a card too. He has a sense of humor. If you read what Albert has to say, it's a shortcut, just as the fun of dying is a shortcut, toward getting all of this, these facts together. So you begin to better understand what's going on. And what is the next one coming out? Because there will be, this week we have the fun of, Dancing Forever with Spirit. Sorry. What's the next one? When is the next one coming out?
Well, the next one was accepted for publishing about a month ago by my publisher. It's called Dance of Heavenly Bliss. And I expect it'll be released sometime later this year or maybe early in 2016.
Wow.
So it's coming fast. And that book is a sequel to the first two. And the third book is, a description of more astral adventures with Albert. And Albert takes me to see different places in the universe, to interview different people on the spirit side who have had human incarnations. So it's really quite it was a fascinating trip for me. Again, everything I see and every person I interview, there's a bit of wisdom there to be learned. There's, an experience for people, a lesson to be learned, for people who are reading the book. So it's really, I'm really quite excited about it. And I feel that my third book is actually better than the first two, Roberta, but time will tell.
Well, I look forward to reading that one, and then we'll have to have you back.
I'd love to be back.
Now, I often talk about the wonderful Academy for Spiritual and Consciousness Studies conference that's going to happen in September of 2015, and I decided I really ought to talk with the person who really knows what's going on. So we're just going to spend a few minutes talking with R. Craig Hogan, who is my co-chair and is terrific. He's the genius behind this conference. Welcome, Craig. Please tell us why we should go to Scottsdale, Arizona in September of 2015.
Yeah, hi, Roberta. It's going to be exciting. What we've done is we've made a real effort to bring together people who can talk about what we really know today about the afterlife, because we know so much, and most people don't realize that. And so we've brought them together, and they're going to be speaking on topics having to do with the entire process of the afterlife, beginning with the transition, what happens just before a person makes the transition, the visions that they see. Carlo Wills Brandon, who is a researcher in the visions that people see before they make the transition, is going to be there. And then we're going to have people talking about what happens immediately after the transition. I'm going to be playing some recordings of people speaking from the afterlife about what happened to them immediately after they transitioned. And Bruce Moen is going to talk about people who are stuck and need to be rescued right after the transition. Then we're going to go into what entities and earthbounds and ghosts there are on the other side and what they are. Rosemary Ellen Guile is going to be there. She's an author of over 50 books and the subject. And Peter Wright is going to be talking about earthbound spirits and ghosts. And we have a psychotherapist named Ellie Pichette, who's going to be talking about what we need to know about spirit possession, what happens in that area in the afterlife. So we're going to be talking about that, and then we're going to talk about how angels and our loved ones communicate with us from the other side, what they're doing over there to communicate, and how it is difficult for them, but at the same time they can come through. And Savannah Wiley, who's a hospice worker, is going to be speaking, and Suzanne Wilson, extremely talented medium, will talk about how our guides, helpers and beneficial entities communicate with us. And Jamie Cherndorf, who is Dr. Love, known very widely throughout the United States as Dr. Love, is going to talk about how our loved ones work to reconnect and heal unfinished business from the other side. And then we're going to have people talking about everyday living. What's it like to live on the other plane of life? And what do people do there with their time? You know, are they strumming harps and, you know, sitting on clouds? And
yes.
We know better than that. They have
right.
things that they're doing. And so people are going to be talking about that. Kim Sheridan, who is the author of Animals and the Afterlife, is going to be talking about animals there. And Patricia McGivern is going to be talking about babies who were lost before birth by miscarriages and other events. And what happens to them? What are they doing on the afterlife? Because they are there. And we have two talented people, Ann Perrier and Carol Morgan, are going to be talking about what their children who are on the afterlife afterlife have told them about what life is like there. So we're going to have this real picture because we know what's going on. We know what it's like to live in the afterlife and what people are doing there. And we just need to let everybody know about it. And then we're going to be talking about soul, the life plans, what happens when we plan life from the other side. And Rob Schwartz is going to be there, who's the author of Your Soul's Plan. And Dick Sutphin, who is a past life regressionist, is going to be talking about past lives and how we're affected on the other side. And Herb Poirier is going to be talking about why we know Jesus taught reincarnation. And Stafford Betty, who is a talented theologian, who is going to be talking about heaven and hell, these ideas, and what is really up with them on the other side, and what we really know about these mythologies of heaven and hell. So all of these authors are going to be coming and speaking about what we really know about the afterlife. Anybody who comes to the conference is going to understand what it's like to make the transition, and then what happens afterwards, and what it's like to live in the afterlife. And that's the purpose of this conference, to be able to bring
exciting.
This to people. Yeah, it's
and
exciting.
We have a couple of all-stars. Who are the, just very briefly, because we're sort of going to run out of time here in a second, but I just want people to know all
sure.
the reasons to come to Scottsdale. Who are the all-stars that are going to be
yeah,
there?
We're going to have...
Everybody is a star, but
yeah.
who are the two that are big hits?
Yeah, we have some really big hits. We have Gary Schwartz, who is the well-known professor and researcher in the afterlife, who's going to be speaking. David Thompson, who is one of the only materialization mediums today. In other words, he's a medium who sits and during the seance, people materialize, and they loved ones speak to them, to their loved ones on this side. And he's going to be actually doing two seances, and he's going to be giving a trance demonstration. So he'll have his control, who is William Cadwell, who's been dead for 200 years, will come through and speak to the whole conference. And then we're going to have a special guest who's going to be attending, is George Norrie, Coast to Coast AM. And he's going to be coming in on Saturday, and he's going to be attending, and he will be there. So it's going to be an exciting time.
So this is going to be a blow-the-doors-off fantastic time.
Mm-hmm.
Anyone who's remotely interested in better understanding the afterlife should look into this seriously. Go to ascsi.org and click on the Scottsdale Conference. It's going to be September 25th to 27th, and there are other activities before and after those dates, but September 25th to 27th. And I hope, if you come to the conference, please let me know that you've heard me this podcast, because I'd love to meet you. Thank you so much, Craig. I'm so excited about this. And
it's
now
a delight.
I'm sad to say we've run out of time, but bless you, dear, and I will talk to you soon.
I'll talk to you soon.
This has been Seek Reality with Roberta Grimes. You are a powerful, eternal being. You never began and you never will end. And when you fully grasp all the implications of that fact, it's going to change everything in your life. If you'd like to learn more of the amazing things we're learning about our one reality, past episodes of Seek Reality are available for free on iTunes. Just search there on Seek Reality with Roberta Grimes. Of course, you already know my nonfiction books are The Fun of Dying, Find Out What Really Happens Next, and The Fun of Staying in Touch, which explores all the ways that our dead loved ones are giving us signs right now of their survival and some of the amazing and cutting-edge ways we're learning to get in touch with them. Very soon, we're going to have direct conversations with the dead, and that is when the whole world is going to change. We'll be having someone on in a few weeks who's going to tell us the state of that art. You'll find details about all my books and my blog at robertagrimes.com. And if you want to contact me, you can contact me through the website. I do answer emails. Our guest next week will be Diane Collins. Diane's wonderful book, Do You Quantum Think?, is a recipe for using the power of your mind to transform your life. Diane, I've had Diane, I think, twice before as a guest on podcasts, and she's always really an exciting person to listen to. Her ideas are just brilliant, and they work. Our guest today has been Garnet Chilhauser. His book about the extraordinary wisdom of his spirit guide, Albert, is Dancing Forever with Spirit. Now, today we've been talking about Garnet's journey. But now, what about your own journey? You have a spirit guide, or two, or three, or in my case, because I guess they find me hard to deal with, 11. You have spirit guides who are devoting their lifetime actually your lifetime, their time with you in this lifetime, to helping you make the most of who you are. Whatever your journey may be, I hope you're listening to your spirit guides, and there are ways you can get better in touch with them. Maybe there's a spirit guide waiting around the corner to help you to transform your life in ways that will allow you to make a wonderful difference in the world as Garnet is. But for now, please enjoy and make the most of this coming week in Hour One Reality, knowing that you are a powerful, eternal being, and you are infinitely loved.